Support for Inside the Recording Studio comes from the heart of Dancin' Deer Studio, a gateway to great music making via a free podcast for your phone, tablet, computer, and ears. Making music that surrounds you.
It was a really strong riff. I mean, that was the biggest thing about it. I don't even think that you realized that it was there.
From Dancin' Deer Studio, this is Inside the Recording Studio, where one song is broken down piece by piece, told week by week. I'm Jody Whitesides. This Labor of Love started with a demo. In this episode, we will be exploring the bass sounds for a song called Touch. In the last episode, we started off with the drums. Oddly enough, this song actually started in written form with the bass line. I'm going to take a little trip down memory lane by opening the demo version of the song. Looking at the file, I see that the bass started with a channel strip that I've made called Deep Growl. There's an instance of Logic's Tuner plugin, followed by the Studio Devil Virtual Bass Amp Pro, or as I call it, the VBAP for short, and the MixIR by Redwires. The VBAP is using a setting I call Growl and Snarl. The settings are as such. I'm using Amp A, the compressor is off, the preamp gain is set to approximately 2 o'clock, the boost switch is turned on, the bass knob is set to approximately 11 o'clock, the mids knob is set to about 4:30, the frequency knob is set to about 1 o'clock, the treble knob is set to about 9:45. The power amp drive is set to 11 o'clock. The clips knob is set to about 8:30. Moving down the plugin, the chorus and the reverb sections are turned off. The graphic EQ section is turned on, where I've got a bump in the lows, a slight scoop in the low mids, and a slight bump in the upper mids and the highs. Next to the graphic EQ, the bright knob is set to about 8:45. The deep knob is set to approximately 10:30. The cabinet function is turned off, and the volume slider looks to be set at approximately minus 6 dB. From there, I'm running into an instance of MixIR using an SVT-810 cabinet. The first block contains a PR40 mic on the cap 12 inches away. Then it's followed by a U47 FET on the cone 1 inch away. The second grouping of mics consists of a Sennheiser E602 on the cap 3 inches away and an SM57 on the cone 4 inches away. I'm running this live bass channel into two auxes with sends and then into the bass subchannel. The first aux is set with a Logic high pass filter set to 730 Hz. An order of 3N and a smoothing of 20 milliseconds. That plugin is followed by the Pod Farm 2 Bronze Master Distortion, where the drive is set at 76%, the tone is set at 44%, and the blend is set to zero. This aux then feeds into the bass subchannel. The second aux is running a Waves Max Bass plugin, where the frequency is set to 70. The ratio is set 4 to 1, and the response is 15. The harmonics high pass is set to a 6 dB cut per octave. The decay is set to minus 24. The input of the plugin is set to 0. The original bass sound is set to off, or technically, set to infinity. The max bass slider is set to minus 2. This is followed by a Logic limiter plugin where the gain is set at plus 12 dB, a look ahead of 2 milliseconds, a release of 2 milliseconds, and an output level of minus 6.6 dB. This aux feeds into the bass subchannel. The bass used for the recording was a Hohner Studio 5 bass, strung with Dean Markley Blue Steel strings. This live bass sounds exactly like this. The chorus riff came first. I wrote it not intending for it to be the standout instrument, but rather the home value for the song, the melodic motif to which other things were going to go a bit further than the initial riff. The verse was a simplified extension of the chorus, mostly because I didn't want a huge departure between the parts. The big changes were to come via the vocals and the surrounding bits. I did take the time to double the live bass parts with a bass synth sound. Usually, the idea behind this is for replacing the sound. In this instance, I wanted to increase the lower register of the bass range, more of a low end and sub thing. The synth bass is a Logic preset called Nord Bass. I did a low pass on it at 255 Hz, 48 dB octave cut, and a 0.71 Q on the EQ. Yes, I was going for a very deep low. And by itself, it sounds like this. This gave the song a very big bottom, something that felt appropriate for a song with a dance-like atmosphere to it. With both the live and the synth basses together, the whole sound came out like this. Once the demo reached the hands of George Leger III, the bass part gained a whole different attitude and prominence in the song. So let's bring George in to speak about it.
What I was starting to get the feeling for was the bass line was kind of our hidden hook. We didn't realize it was there. Once I started to kind of trim away the arrangement to get to the bass line to see what was there, and then once we figured out what it was, to tighten it up a bit, getting it really happening funky, maybe see if we could double it with some things to make it more interesting. But the bass line was freaking awesome. I mean, it was really, really good to begin with. It just hadn't been focused yet. As strange as that might sound, you know, you listen to the original demo, it's there. But by the time we got to the end of the final production, it had been doubled with some other stuff and really, really focused on to be a highlighted function, to be the basis of the bed track. We built everything on top of. So for me, it was there. We didn't know it was there until we sat down and started to take a more closer look at stuff. That's when I started to notice anyway. I said, hey, we got this great riff. Why don't we really make it the basis of our song?
Why did you choose to make the bass line the driving motif of the song?
Well, I guess if you think of some of the best songs that have been out there over the years, the bass line is part of the main foundation of that particular song, too. So it was kind of like one of those things where you can either do a song riff bass, like with a guitar or a keyboard. In this particular case, it just happened to be the bass line. It could have been something else. I mean, if we'd had another really interesting riff that was buried in there, something, say, that would have worked great in the chorus and between the break or something, but nothing was even close. That bass line was it. And we knew it pretty quick once we realized it.
Is there anything about the bass that you changed and why?
I'm pretty sure we changed pretty much everything from the beginning to the end. I thought we changed the bass sound. I'm pretty sure we did. But I'm not entirely sure, but I do know that I went in, I edited it out, I made sure that everything was nice and tight and clean. The kick drum was working with it as well, so we had a really nice punch between the kick and the bass. We doubled it with some other sounds so that it would be really focused. So, it's like, again, back to the very beginning. Some songs are based on guitar riffs, some are synth hooks, whatever. In this case, it was the bass line. So that's the thing that got the most attention, at least initially. You know, until we start to pick through the other arrangement components that were there to make them work better as well. Sometimes having a demo as the basis of a track can be really, really interesting. It's almost like a sculpture, I see it. Sometimes it takes just some meticulous editing, some really, you know, like a surgeon. You don't want to go in and wipe out tons of stuff, but sometimes you get a thing with, for example, the guitar part that we have in the song. It was one thing initially, and in the end it turned into something quite different, but it was all entirely based on what was there to begin with. So in this case, the bass line was chiseling, which made it more focused, sounding better, EQ'd better. But yeah, the bass part was pretty darn important.
The final version of the bass sound has three channels in the final mix. George had me bounce out the original live bass line from the demo without the aux channels of the demo. There are two channels for the live bass, each with identical settings except for the volume. The first channel has a Logic compressor and a Logic channel EQ. The settings of each will get discussed in a forthcoming mixing episode. The live channels are doing a single send in an aux containing the high pass filter and the Pod Farm 2 distortion from the demo. The live bass sound now sounds like this. The original Nord bass parts and sound is still there. This channel is doing a single send to an aux, but has two aux channels set up to receive the sound. The first aux channel has a Wave R-Bass plugin followed by a Logic compressor. The second aux channel has a Waves Puigtec EQP followed by a Waves CLA-76 plugin. Again, the settings for these will be discussed in the upcoming mix episode. The Nord bass now sounds like this. And when all of it's combined, it sounds like this. Stay tuned for the upcoming guitar episode. Inside the Recording Studio is produced by John Michael Kane, George Leger, and I. Frank Cadillac is the production and operations manager. Alex Hitchens is our editorial advisor. Editing help comes from Harrison Knightley. Plugin and regions checking by TJ Burke. Special thanks for this episode goes to Apple, Mark Gallo and the Studio Devil plugins, Mike and the Red Wires plugins, Josh Vitek and Dean Markley strings, Universal Audio, Line 6 and the Pod Farm 2, Waves, their Max Bass plugin, their R-Bass plugin, their Puigtec EQP plugin, and the CLA-76 plugin, plus the staff at Dancing Deer Studio and Utopia Parkway Studio. I must not forget Math Fairweather for putting up with me while I was running around and recording this song. Support for Inside the Recording Studio comes from Jody Whitesides, who asks you to stream the song Touch on Spotify, make a purchase of it on iTunes, or donate to the podcast. Subscribe to the RSS feed for Inside the Recording Studio. Inside the Recording Studio is a production of Dancing Deer Studio.